VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I sold it in December of 2020, so it was right in the middle of COVID. And I was also traveling quite a bit. I was overseas in Ireland quite a bit and in Portugal during COVID. So I think a lot of those factors contributed. And if I had to do it over again, I would probably be a little more discerning and take a little more time before selling. Because I sold primarily for stock. And the company I sold it to, once I was an employee, I couldn't sell the stock because there's all these blackout periods. Then once I left, I was able to sell the stock, quite a bit of it. But then the stock, you know, went down to like pennies. So in hindsight, I'll do things a little bit differently next time.
Welcome to Think Business with Tyler, sharing our methods and strategies for success. Join in on our conversations with business owners as we highlight their triumphs and detail how they overcame the challenges they faced while continuing to grow and scale their business. It's time to think life, think success, and think business with your host, Tyler Martin.
Hey, it's Tyler here. Welcome back to Think Business. Today, we're going to dive deep with Christian Espinoza, a man who trades triathlons for tech triumphs and seeks success beyond the scoreboard. Prepare to be inspired by tales of resilience, ethical hacking insights, and the unique challenges of keeping medical devices safe in a cyber-threatened world. So grab your drink, settle in, and let's think business. Let's get started. Hey, Christian, welcome to the Think Business with Tyler podcast show. How is it going today?
It's going awesome, Tyler. I'm glad to be here. I love talking about business.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to have you. Hey, before we get into it, can you share a little bit about what you do professionally?
Professionally, I'm an entrepreneur. I am running my second cybersecurity business. I'm working to scale that. I also do real estate investing, and I write books as well and teach leadership classes and speak about leadership.
That's awesome. How many books do you have published now?
I've got two published right now, and I'm working on my third one right now as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, congratulations. One is a heavy lift from my own experience trying to do it. To already be on your third, that's pretty awesome. What about something personal? Anything you can share personally?
Personally, I am passionate about helping people get to the next level in their life and get over whatever their perceived barriers are. I think we all know what to do. We have this innate wisdom, but through society and whatever else goes on, it's sometimes like lose tune with that or lose touch with that. So that's something I'm passionate about.
Very cool. Now, another on a personal note, I know you've done, is it 24 triathlons in your lifetime?
I've done 24 Ironman distance triathlons. I've probably done like, you know, 70 triathlons of various distances. Yeah.
Sorry, wrong word came out. That's a big difference.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Tell me what does it to complete an Ironman, which by the way, Ironman is what? It's swimming, biking, and jogging or running?
Yeah, swim, bike, run.
Mm-hmm. And what are the distances? Do you know?
The swim is 2.4 miles, the bike is 112, the run is 26.2.
That's crazy. So it's a marathon on the running. The water, I don't know, after about 100 feet, you kind of lost me probably. But so what does that mean to you to complete those? Is that a mental challenge? Obviously, physical challenge. How does that play into your business life and your entrepreneurial experiences, do you think?
I would say it's probably half of it is mental, half of it's physical. And there's, you know, emotional too. For me, with an Ironman triathlon, it's like a lifetime compressed into 13 hours or so. That's about how long it takes me to do it. You go through all the ups and downs, you know, the peaks and valleys where you feel like, I'm not sure I can continue going. And then you feel better and you're going with a group of people that all, you know, are all on a collective journey. For me, I've done Ironmans where I've been like on the side of the road, like vomiting in the fetal position and just wondering, am I going to get the courage to get back up? But I, you know, slowly get up. Somebody might, you know, offer to help. Someone did in that case. And I got up and just started walking. And then eventually I started running again. And I think that's very similar to business, because I've been in the fetal position in business, just crying and thinking, I don't know if I'm going to be able to figure this out, you know? So it's very similar. But as long as you stick with something like the Ironman, you'll finish it. And with business, a lot of it is perseverance as well.
It's almost like a resiliency in a way, just sticking through it. After you've done like, you know, a few of those, is it pretty much you assume you're going to be able to finish every one, or is each one equally just as challenging in terms of mentally being able to finish?
They're equally just as challenging. I haven't not finished any. I finished every one I've started, but it depends on my level of fitness. I know if I'm not as fit as I need to be, haven't done like the long bike rides and the long runs, then it's gonna be super painful. I remember I wasn't too fit when I did one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it took me a long time to finish, and you know, I was limping and my feet severely hurt. So, you know, but I was able to finish. It's just like you just gotta keep moving forward.
Yeah.
But like anything else, the more prepared you are, the easier the experience is.
I'm fascinated by the mental toughness that it requires to do those. I always think of David Goggins, I've read both of his books, and some mm-hmm. of the things he's done under the amount of pain he's been under or discomfort, and just mentally he kind of powers through it is, I don't know. I think some people are cut from a different mold. I don't think everybody can do that, you know?
I think everybody can do it. I think it's a matter of choosing to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. For me, with Ironman or mountaineering or starting a business, I sort of seek out that discomfort. I think if we go through something uncomfortable, it forces us to grow and become more resilient. And I think resiliency is an important thing in life.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. iBridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com. I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
And I think resiliency is an important thing in life.
Yeah, I love that thought process. I don't know. Maybe I could do an ultra endurance type 100 miles, but it just seems like the toll it takes on your body. You do have to be, I mean, although, you know, to his credit, when you hear his story, David in particular, he's just a regular guy, or at least he started out that way. He was a heavy set guy that wasn't doing too well in life. So to your point, probably can, if you're resilient enough and you want it bad enough, you probably can do it. Hey, shifting gears, I want to talk about your cybersecurity business, particularly the first one that you sold. What do you feel are key factors that contributed to the success of your first venture in your cybersecurity business?
I think there's two main key factors. One of them, which I wrote about in my first book, The Smartest Person Room, was I added people skills and emotional intelligence and culture and core values to my organization. In cybersecurity, there's a lot of super highly rationally intelligent people that are missing those people skills, which when they're talking to a client, they want to be smarter than the client. So they talk over the client's head. When they talk to each other, they're just looking for an opportunity to prove that somebody doesn't know what they're talking about. So I fixed that in my business and got the culture dialed in, and then hired people for cultural fit instead of just technical fit. I think that was the first thing. The second thing is I got laser focused on a specific area that I wanted to do cybersecurity in. What I realized is you can't try to offer everything to everyone. Effectively, if you do that, you're offering nothing to no one. So I decided to niche it down and focus on medical device cybersecurity, which is a very specific niche in cybersecurity. And it has a specific skill set and a specific market and avatar. So once I focused on that and really dialed that in, including our messaging, our advertisements, any time we spoke about it, you know, we got more clients. So it seems a little bit counterintuitive because I sort of filtered everything else out. And at first I was like, well, if I do this, I'm going to miss out on opportunities. But once I got laser focused and got the messaging dialed in, I actually had more business coming in.
Wow. Now, when I think healthcare, I immediately think HIPAA. And so you have like a whole different layer as it relates to cybersecurity. Wasn't that a little bit of a barrier to entry, or how do you get past? Because I know HIPAA has like all kinds of, you know, software has to be HIPAA compliant, things like that. Did that create any challenge for you to get into that market?
Yeah. So the interesting thing with medical device security, it doesn't really have anything to do with HIPAA, a little bit. Okay. HIPAA is really protecting PHI or patient data. With medical devices, there's some focus on protecting patient data, but the data is not typically on the device. The major focus is on patient safety. Because if you have a medical device that is responsible for doing back surgery, a surgical robot, and that device is hacked, you could damage somebody's spinal cord. Or if you have one that is a drug infusion pump, which those have been compromised, and you can hack into it and increase the flow rate, you can kill somebody. So the focus on medical devices is really FDA approval instead of HIPAA, and then on patient safety.
Huh. Is that a special knowledge that you acquire as you work with them? Like, was that a little bit of a barrier to you getting into that and learning that? Or do you just kind of learn as you go? What impact does that have, if any?
I've been doing medical device security since 2015, so 9 years now. Since the FDA first started requiring the cybersecurity component to medical devices. And it's a pretty big learning curve, because a lot of things you have to do that you don't do in a typical cybersecurity assessment. Like, one of the things is what's called a software bill of materials. So any software a medical device uses, you have to analyze that software and figure out where all the components came from, and basically trace the whole lineage of that software, because there's been attacks like Shellshock, which took advantage of software that a lot of people didn't even know was in their code. Because when people write code, they borrow pieces of software from other places. So that's like a unique skill set that you typically don't do, but the FDA requires that. Therefore, medical device manufacturers have to have that accomplished.
Wow. I never even really thought about, until you just said it, about some type of medical device being hacked and like a robotic arm or something in terms of surgery. That's pretty scary when you think about it.
Yeah, on average, there's 14 devices connected to a hospital bed or in a room. And a lot of those devices have vulnerabilities. Even in implantables, like a pacemaker, have been compromised. I know I wrote about this in my first book. Dick Cheney, for a while, was super paranoid. There's a legitimate threat about somebody attacking him through his pacemaker, because you can wirelessly affect the pacemaker and cause it to just shock somebody over and over and over and kill them. So he actually had his pacemaker removed to avoid that threat.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it seems like I was watching something, and I know this isn't related necessarily to your world, but even like when it comes to the little beepers on your car that unlocks the doors and mm-hmm. sometimes starts it. I was watching something, I think it was on YouTube, and where they were showing a real demonstration where someone could walk out and they could actually grab that signal and start the car and take off in it. And it's pretty wild. I mean, when you think about the vulnerabilities, you would think for like modern day technology, we wouldn't be so vulnerable, but it seems like we really are.
100%. A lot of it is poor software development practices. Typically, security is added after the product or the application is finished versus as part of the requirements and the development. And that's what caused a lot of the issues. And here in Phoenix, you're talking about like cars. Phoenix is one of three cities that have autonomous driving cars. Here, I take them all the time. They're Waymos. They're called Waymo. That's a brand. And I've always like wondered, you know, what did they do to protect this car from cyber attacks? Because if somebody could compromise the driverless autonomous car you're in and cause it to go 100 miles an hour or run into something, they could kill you. So it's like pretty concerning, but I've done the research. It sounds like they've done their due diligence. I hope so. I haven't had any accidents yet. So.
Yeah, I mean, it'd make a great movie. They get a hold of the whole network of cars and they've got all these rogue cars flying around at one time. Yeah. Hey, to pull back onto course, because I tend to get off on tangents. So culture seemed to be something you really focused on as part of building your business, which is awesome. Is there anything else you implemented as you started to scale in your first business that you can attribute to its success?
I think the getting laser focused on the medical device market. And then I remember in December, I spent one December with my leadership team. We spent like 3 days working on what's called a one-page strategic plan, which really focuses you on specific things to do in your business, like your messaging, the sandbox you want to play in, your target addressable market, you know, all these areas that I think once I did that with my team and we all got collectively behind it, things really started to fall in place after that as well.
That's very cool.
It was like the first time I really dug deep on the planning and with my team. I used to do it just for myself, but when I do it with my team, it seemed like we all gelled and were in sync a lot more.
Was that the same one-page strategic plan out of Vern Harnish's Scaling Up book?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool. Those are cool tools. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What? How did you know when was the right time to sell? Was there anything that triggered it, or did it just happen to present its opportunity to you?
I don't know if it was the right time to sell, to be honest. it was during COVID, and I got a lot of requests about buying my company. And then this one company called Cerberus at the time, they rebranded, they wanted to buy my company, and I spoke with them. And for some reason, I thought maybe this is synchronicity or something, but their company name was Cerberus, which is a three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell. The squadron I was in the Air Force Academy was called Cerberus. I have a patent on a cyber attack device called Cerberus. So I thought maybe there's some synchronicity here, these three Cerberuses. And that kind of factored in. And then also, because during COVID, I ended up losing a lot of clients. My first company, we did in-person cybersecurity training, and nobody was doing things in person anymore. Nobody wanted to do it remotely. And then a lot of people, due to the quote uncertainty, didn't want to make purchasing decisions as well. So I think it was a little bit of that Cerberus three times, and a little bit of me just kind of being burned out, and the situation with COVID. I thought, okay, this is a good opportunity because I'm not sure what's going to happen with COVID anymore. And this, I sold it in December of 2020. So it was right in the middle of COVID. And I was also traveling quite a bit. I was overseas in Ireland quite a bit and in Portugal during COVID. So I think a lot of those factors contributed. And if I had to do it over again, I would probably be a little more discerning and take a little more time before selling, because I sold primarily for stock. And a company I sold it to, once I was an employee, I couldn't sell the stock because there's all these blackout periods. Then once I left, I was able to sell the stock, quite a bit of it. But then the stock, you know, went down to like pennies. So in hindsight, I'll do things a little bit differently next time.
If you're a business owner feeling stuck in your business, overwhelmed, responsible for everything that happens, and working long hours, Tyler helps his clients develop processes, hire high-performing team members, and better understand their financial metrics and numbers to allow for a more predictable, less hands-on business. To schedule a free, no-pressure consultation, head to thinktyler.com and click the meeting button. Tyler would love to see if he can help you work on your business, not in your business. Schedule a consultation today at thinktyler.com. Think life, think success, think business.
But then the stock, you know, went down to like pennies. So in hindsight, I'll do things a little bit differently next time.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I'm always a believer that when you sell, you take the information at hand when it's happening, and you can't really look back. I sold a second business, the election had just happened. There was a new president coming in. We were scared to death that my partner and I, we were scared to death that the economy is going to kind of fall apart. We were at our all-time high. So that was kind of what decided for us. We decided to sell. Now, in hindsight, it's been 6 years of dramatic growth. Well, maybe up until this year, things have slowed down in the tech staffing space. But for many years, there had been nothing but exponential growth from that point forward. So if we kind of look back for many years, we were like, man, we should have got another 20% each year, another 20%, another 20%. And instead, you know, we took what we got. And you just kind of have to, like you said, learn from it. But at the same point,
yeah,
I'm sure it felt right at the point. I mean, it was so unknown. COVID, like you didn't, could that be another 5-year thing? Could it be a 10-year thing? Could it be a 6? I mean, who would have known?
Yeah.
It kind of played out. Even when you look at the stock market, it's bizarre. The stock market's like crashing, and then all of a sudden it just goes almost straight up like a rocket in that one period where they, you know, the vaccine started getting mentioned and stuff. So it's hard. Yeah. I mean, it's it's hard. Good learning lesson. You know, I want to shift gears over to your book on the smartest person in the room. You talk about the limitations of seeking validation through an achievement. How has this influenced your approach in business, entrepreneurship, leadership? Has that played a role in your own way of handling things?
I think so. I mean, feel like I've matured quite a bit. I focus on growth and reflect a lot. In the past, I grew up in like a really poor environment. So achieving things was a way to like prove everybody wrong because nobody thought I would succeed. I mean, I grew up in Arkansas and, you know, with a drug addicted mother on welfare and food stamps and all that stuff. So I think a lot of my life was about seeking that validation through achievement. But then I started making the shift and realized I don't need anybody else's validation or even my own about achieving things. I just need to feel good about what I'm doing and make sure it's alignment with what I want to do and what I believe is my purpose. So I've sort of stopped seeking that validation through achievement. And then a lot of people do that. I think was my first book. I called it The Smartest Person in the Room because most people in high-tech industries or cybersecurity, they feel significant by being, quote, smarter than other people. So if that is your identity, you always look for times to prove that you're smarter than somebody. And that's, you know, their validation, which obviously, if that's your motive, it causes communication breakdowns and it makes people feel unappreciated and misunderstood. And that's why I focus on fixing that in my company. Clients generally want to feel appreciated and understood, and your staff wants to feel the same way.
Yeah, it's hard though. I mean, I even look at myself. We oftentimes look for validation through our achievements. I mean, that's, you know, every step it seems like you take in your career, it kind of validates you in some way. So it's hard to kind of step back from that and go, hey, I mean, and I applaud you for doing it. Just step back and go, hey, that doesn't define you. Like it's all these other things that you've done in your career, whether it be family or, you know, values or whatever is, you know, more important than just the achievement itself. So, but that it is hard to do, don't you think? I mean, it takes really a maturity. Like I think you use that word maturity and just kind of self-awareness.
Yeah. I guess for me, I think my validation now comes from growth because I have some pretty ambitious goals and I realize that I need to become somebody different to achieve those goals or attract those things or that money or whatever it is. So that process, if I step back and look at that process, that's the process of growth. That to me is some validation, more so than the outcomes tied to that growth.
What do you think gave you the strength or the awareness? It sounds like you had a pretty tough childhood. What removed those barriers that sometimes, you know, can be put in place? Like it says, hey, I'm not good enough, or I'm just not in the right economic family that's going to allow me to succeed. How did you get through that?
I believe I knew even early on when I was a child and a teenager going through that situation that there was more to life than the way my mother was living. And what I did, and this is kind of, it's a curse as well, is if I'm in a chaotic situation or if things aren't going well, what I tend to do is set goals and focus and block everything else out and try to accomplish those goals. And I wrote about this in my second book because I think my childhood gave me that drive to do just that. But then at some point, I realized that the me against the world attitude was holding me back. It was like a glass ceiling. So I realized that, you know, I'm part of the world. I need to be part of the world. I'm me in the world. And that drive, I had to tune it out, turn it down and focus on, you know, what's right in front of me. Cause it cost me that drive, that ambition, and that kind of have the blinders on and going at that macro goal. I think cost me relationships. It cost me friendships. It cost me, you know, information that maybe would have told me that this goal I'm seeking is really not the goal I want. So now I'm more in tune with the present, but I still have an eye for the, you know, the goal I want to accomplish as well.
Yeah. Sounds like you have a lot of self-awareness that allows you to see some of these things.
I've had a life coach, a high performance coach for, I don't know, maybe 5 years. So I think it helps to have somebody on the outside look at your patterns. And then I've also gone through coaching training myself. I've coached other people, so that helps. And then writing a book, I believe, should be transformational to the author. So when I wrote both of my books, I really had to reflect on my role in everything, because I'm not a proponent of just blaming everybody else for your circumstances. I'm a proponent of, like, what is my role in this? Because it all boils down to what I can control, which is me. I can't control everybody else.
Right, right. In fact, I want to talk about your other book, Living in the Micro. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, how's that impacted having a fulfilling entrepreneurial journey, Living in the Micro?
As I kind of mentioned before, I used to get those super blinders on going after that macro goal or that big thing I want to accomplish. And the book, The In-Between, Living in the Micro, is about in between where I am and this big goal I want to accomplish. There's all these like small moments that I could add value to if I intentionally show up. And these moments will contribute to my fulfillment and may inform me that the big goal I think I want is really not the goal I want, or it's really not that important. So it's sort of my unraveling of being hyper-focused on the big goal, which I got from my childhood, and sort of like balancing that big goal with what's right in front of me, which could be the sunset, it could be a relationship, it could be anything that I used to kind of ignore because I was so hyper-focused on that big goal.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I want to switch gears to just cybersecurity and hacking, in particular ethical hacking. I've been reading lately, it seems like articles are getting fed to me more in my feed about ethical hacking. And one of the most recent articles, it said something along the lines of, hey, ethical hacking is the wave of the future. Now, I believe that's what you do now. Can you share with us a little bit, what is ethical hacking? And is this something like that's the wave of the future?
I'm not sure it's a wave of the future. It is definitely a necessity. So ethical hacking, some people call it white hat hacking, is where the good guys try to break into somebody's environment and tell them how they got in. The good guys are supposed to use the same tactics as the cyber criminals. And the whole idea is, if you have an ally break into your product or your business, they can tell you how to fix all the holes and how to make it more secure so the actual criminal, the cyber criminal, can't break in. So as far as like, is it the way of the future? I think it's becoming more and more popular because technology doesn't stop everything. Training doesn't stop everything. So you need, from a holistic cybersecurity point of view, you need that ethical hacking to test to make sure the controls you think are working are actually effective.
Yeah. So, you know, I recently, one of my social media accounts was hacked twice. And the first time I had somewhat of a generic password. And so I said, I chalked it up. No big deal. They probably were able to figure it out. Second time it had 15 characters. Supposedly I was told that was an extremely strong password. Only website that had that password. I didn't have any other websites, and it got hacked into. And to this date, I still don't know how, although it's stopped now. It's been a few months, hopefully permanently. It seems like this is like, when I started researching about it, it seems like just hacking in general is, and then I think we all get it anyway. We get all these notices saying we're constantly being hacked. I mean, what's the solution here in your opinion? Like, how does this stop? Seems like nothing's safe. Like, I would literally worry about my investment accounts. I mean, I have obviously 2FA set up, but I feel like if someone wanted to target me, they probably could get whatever they want.
So I think the multi-factor authentication is the right step. I also think taking stock of all the accounts you have and getting rid of the ones you don't need is beneficial. Because what happens, it sounds like this wasn't the case to you because you said you were only using that password on that one social media. But what happens is, if one provider is hacked and the hackers get your username, which is often your email, and your password, that's leaked on the dark net or the dark web. And then somebody takes that information and tries to use it against your other accounts, assuming you're using the same password. So I think that is important. And the multi-factor authentication and just some awareness, you know, to get rid of those accounts you don't need. And it's interesting because, I don't know if it's interesting or frustrating, because I invested some money in crypto with a company that basically, you know, consolidates different investors and in invest in crypto. And their wallet was stolen. So I lost all of my money and they're trying to get it back. You think these things are secure, but even like stuff on your cryptocurrency account, that stuff is hacked as well.
Yeah. See, that's scary. I feel like the problem with 2FA is, if you're doing it to your phone, you know, if someone wanted it bad enough, I feel like they could probably get access to your phone. Like whether that means you, I don't know. I just feel like they could, I mean, it's your whole world now is on your phone. Like literally if someone could crack that, or even if, I don't know, maybe there's with one of these code generators, there's less likelihood of that happening, but I don't really totally, I guess I don't totally understand this. It just seems like we're very vulnerable. It's scary.
Yeah. And there's things called keyloggers. I was a victim of one of those before, where you go, you visit a website, you watch a video that you download or something, and in the background, it installs a keylogger on your computer. So then it basically monitors all your keystrokes and then sends those keystrokes to somebody else. So that could have been how your password was compromised as well.
Yeah. I looked for, if you do have like a keylogger issue, what I read from it is you'll get like, it'll be a little stuttery, your keyboard, or you might get slowdown, which would be signs that you could have a keylogger. Is that true in terms of?
That's one symptom, but that doesn't always happen. You may have a keylogger and not even know. Just like your webcam may be turned on, and you don't even know that. You know, or your microphone on your computer may be turned on, and you don't know that. There's been many cases in the government where nation states have hacked into government computers, turned on the microphone, recorded the conversation in an area, zipped it up, and then sent it off to the other country. You know, things like that. And this is supposed to be, you know, the Department of Defense and government that supposedly are really good at cyber defense, but not so much.
Yeah, see, that's what blows me away. I mean, if that can happen at theoretically the most secure spots in the world, or should be, we're doomed for the people that don't have all those, you know, don't have access to all those tools and stuff. So I don't know. It's crazy. But anyway, thank God for guys like you, though. I'll tell you, hopefully the cybersecurity world, we keep getting better at it, because there's definitely a need to protect. You know, I know a good buddy of mine lost $160,000. Someone hacked into his accounts, and it was rightfully his error in that he gave trusted people he thought were trusted passwords, and they apparently gave them to others. But
wow,
you know, it's just scary. And you know, I had a nonprofit that lost $1 million, and when they talked to the FBI said the case wasn't big enough. They've got so many different issues, it's not worth their time.
$1 million is not big enough.
Doesn't that blow your mind? Like, I mean, that just goes to show you the problem. Anyway, you know what I want to wrap up on here? You've had such a, you got so many great philosophies, ways of approaching things. You've got a tough mindset. You've built and sold a business. You're now on your second venture. Is there anything you can share to us entrepreneurs, some wisdom that you've learned, or just point us in the right direction of things that could help us become more successful?
I think something that really helped me, in addition to the one-page strategic plan, is the story brand framework from Donald Miller. There's a thing called Brand Script, and you can do it for free there on his webpage. So walking through that brand script really helped me dial in the messaging for the medical device manufacturers, because ultimately, as a business, our goal is to be a guide and guide our prospect or our client across a chasm, you know, from the hell to the heaven, or whatever phrase you want to use, across that chasm. And I think the problem with a lot of businesses is they try to position themselves as the hero in the story. Like, look how great we are. We do blah, 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 blah. Where the reality is, your client should be the hero in the story, and you're that guide. And I think going through that brand script framework, which there's, I forgot how many steps, I think there's 7 steps. Going through that will really force you to understand your pain points of your client, how you solve that, what your messaging is, and how to position yourself as a guide.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. I bridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com. I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
How you solve that, what your messaging is, and how to position yourself as a guide.
Yeah, those are both great resources. So you got 2 websites. Your business one, bluegoatcyber.com. By the way, is there a story behind that, bluegoatcyber.com?
It's interesting. Everyone asks about the name of the company. So I like blue. Blue's my favorite color.
Okay.
Blue's a calming, trustworthy color as well. And then I like goats. So I do mountaineering, and sometimes you see goats on the mountains, and a lot of times you do. And the thing about goats is they're very resilient and very persistent at trying to climb things and get to the next level. So I feel like, you know, I kind of embody those two terms.
Very cool. And you're in your blue right now just to support.
I'm in blue. I happen to be wearing blue as well today.
Okay, cool. And then your other website, your personal website, is christianespinoza.com. Christianespinoza.com. And I'll put both of these links in the show notes at thinktyler.com. Christian, can't thank you enough. If people wanted to reach out to you other than these two websites, anywhere else you want them to go?
They can reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Those are probably the two main ones.
Okay, cool.
I'm also on Instagram and, you know, most social media.
Okay. I'll add your LinkedIn link too to the show notes. Well, hey, thanks for being on the show. Good luck in business number two. I hope it leads to the same result, just with hopefully more multiples behind it.
Yeah, hopefully 10 times better is my goal.
I love it. Thanks so much. Have a good one, okay?
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
Nice to see you.
That's all for this episode of Think Business with Tyler. But we have plenty more resources to help you in your pursuit of business excellence on our website at thinktyler.com. If you'd like to be featured in a future episode of the show, feel free to reach out to us on social media at think_Tyler. We look forward to helping you think life, think success, and think business.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Miles, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the Wanna Bet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but Wanna Bet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electricast. Electricast.